Greetings all and welcome to another episode of TechNet Radio. My name is Dan Stoltz and I'll be your host today. You can reach me on my blog at itproguru.com or email me at itproguru@microsoft.com. Today we're kicking off a Data in the Cloud multi-part series as we talk about why and how customers are using Microsoft Azure. Make sure you stick around to the end of the show where we'll share some tips and tricks for continuing to learn, and a program you can possibly qualify for to gain access to free Microsoft Azure software and cloud services. Today we're joined by Sean Bice. Welcome, Sean. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So why don't we kick things off with just a quick introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what makes you qualified to kind of teach us about this topic.
Yeah, sounds good. So I started, Microsoft in 97. I think the first job that I had was working on IIS back in the day in the NT era. But I've spent pretty much my entire career in the enterprise and working across of what is known today as C&E or our cloud and enterprise businesses, where I've basically spent my whole job. So I've worked in Windows Server, the last 8 or so years here on Pure Data System Center as well. So I've been in this domain for some time and have seen some really nice change. And in fact, this era, if you will, of computing and data and the cloud, et cetera, is probably the most exciting thing I've seen in the last 15, 20 years.
I'll tell you, I'll second that. I am just flat out excited at how fast and, you know, how much things have changed with the whole rise of the cloud. You know, and I think back to 1995 and all the major impact that the internet, whenever the internet came along, happened. And, you know, I see cloud and cloud services, you know, dwarfing the progress that we made out of just the creation of the internet. So as we look at, you know, just the massive amount of features that are available and capabilities that make up the cloud platform, what we really want to get out of this first, you know, introduction to the series is, you know, why people care, why they use it. So how should people look at the cloud, and, you know, what are some of the use cases for why we would be even interested in this?
Yeah. So I think it's always interesting to sort of look back in time, and, you know, since you brought up, you know, like you think of the mid-90s when I guess the internet is introduced and people are, gosh, even at the Super Bowl just this past week, and I thought there was a pretty funny commercial in there with Brian Gumbel and Katie Couric trying to sort of explain what email or an at symbol was, and, yeah, you know, it's kind of entertaining. I don't know if you saw that commercial.
I did see it.
It was like, wow, that was not that long ago, and boy, oh boy, look where we've come today. But, you know, I remember, you know, back in the 2000 era, if you guys remember the whole application service provider pitch or value prop, it was, you know, back then it was largely about how do we take advantage of this notion of hosting applications in another environment that somebody else is running, and that kind of led to this, I don't know that the technology was truly ready then, but it led to this era of managed hosting and co-location, and there are a lot of providers that came along the way. And, you know, during, you know, from 2000, if you fast forward to today, you know, there's been some pretty interesting things, trends that have happened in the industry that I think really bring forward why the cloud is going to be important for years to come. And that is, you know, back in 2000, we didn't have this explosion of devices. It's not like everybody was running around with a cell phone. It wasn't like we were talking about connected cars. There weren't sensors in every single facility measuring every single thing. Back then, you could have argued that was maybe a niche. But in today's world, you have this explosion of devices, which is resulting in this explosion of data. And that data can come in real fast, it can come in slow, it can come in different formats, structured or semi-structured. And what you have today is businesses that are fundamentally wanting to get value out of every single byte of data that is coming into their businesses. And, you know, when you think of the volume and the speed and the different aspects of data, you know, could you really imagine trying to pull that off, you know, new scenarios just in your own local enterprise? Or, You know, does it really actually have you stand back and go, wow, this notion of hyperscale and being able to compute at a global level and store data in a very economical sense at a global level, like, could you really do that in your own enterprise? And I don't know that many can, and that's why I think, you know, when we talk about Azure today, you know, we really talk about three fundamental ways of differentiating, which is around hyperscale, being enterprise grade, and hybrid. And there's really not many companies that can, you know, that sort of fit into that regard. But I love to tell this one story. Like, you know, we really talk about, you know, this notion of a lot of devices, tons of data, and how do you get value out of it? And one of my favorite stories to tell is the connected cow. So I'm sure you guys have heard the connected car and Internet of Things scenarios. You probably have talked about that months before, but have you heard of the connected cow?
No. Share the wisdom.
All right. This is so in Japan, this is a real story of, in Japan, beef is actually really hard. These farmers have a hard time managing beef in Japan, and it really does come at a premium there. And so, you know, if you could imagine these farmers in Japan, there's an actual case study, NEC was working on this, where these farmers had about 800 cows. And as a farmer just trying to manage cows, it is really about increasing the lot, if you will. And one of the things these farmers have had a hard time on for years is just understanding when a cow is going to go into heat and how to best respond to that so they can sort of maximize their inventory, if you will. Mm-hmm. But these guys have struggled for years until now. And basically what they've done is they put a bracelet, like an ankle bracelet, on every cow. And when you look at the video, it's always fun to pause and you say, hey, what do you, you know, what do you think that bracelet's for? And frankly, it looks like, you know, a cow sort of violated parole and they put the little low jack on them.
Yep.
So the cow, you know, it turns out what these farmers are doing now is the bracelet is sort of feeding up data to them through sensors all the time. So what they've done is you'll see, like, a cow in a normal behavior is just walking around, has so many steps per day. But when a cow actually goes into heat, the amount of steps that a cow will take almost quadruples. And if, you know, you can imagine without sensors and collecting data as a farmer, you're not there 24/7 and you don't really know when this is going to happen. It's hard to do with 800 cows, but with sensors, they're able to actually baseline and detect exactly when a cow is going into heat. And then the other thing that they've learned is that in this, like, 12-hour period that a cow is in heat, in the first 8 hours, if you were to mate a cow, you'll have another cow, whereas in the last, I believe it's 4 hours, you're likely to have a bull. And, you know, this short story is a perfect example of, you know, a farmer who has now connected that cow into Azure. Basically, all that telemetry data on those cows is going into Azure, and machine learning is running against it. So that when an anomaly is detected, what happens is a notification, actually a text or a phone call, will come back down to a farmer. And so, it you know, this whole revolution has, you know, it's basically revolutionized, you know, this farmer's business in Japan. And, you know, could that farmer have done that without the cloud and without the technology that's available? Probably be really hard to do. But the, you know, this farming industry, I think, has raised their margins by 20% to 30%, and they're managing their lot of cows in a way that they've never been able to do before. So it's a pretty cool breakthrough.
Yeah, when we think about all the devices that are out there now, I mean, with the Internet of Things, and it seems like there's dozens or even hundreds of new startups almost every day, certainly every week, with all these different, you know, great ideas for, you know, for devices that are, you know, making our life better, from, you know, my, you know, in existing devices too, like my refrigerator, you know, phones home, if you will, to the manufacturer, so the manufacturer can let me know if there's you know, if there's any issues or potential issues. It's just amazing. It's mind blowing how much this connected environment is being used in everything that we do, and it's just growing exponentially. I personally, I look at all these devices and I'm like, you know, can this ever end? Because all these great ideas, you know, you think envisions are kind of slowing down, and all of a sudden this Internet of Things pops up and there's millions of new ideas constantly being brought to bear, and almost every single one of them are leveraging cloud and cloud services for one reason or another.
Yeah, no, it's spot on. I'll tell you, you know, when you talk to, I mean, this is such a fun topic. And, you know, the reality is that, you know, we really believe that the companies and businesses, you know, that are going to be the most successful are the ones that really get value out of every single byte of data they have access to. And, you know, that's what, you know, we talk about this data-driven culture. And look, I really believe some people are really, truly going to embrace this. And I think what that means to us, all of us, and regardless to what you do, we really could see breakthroughs in every single industry segment. You know, you think of manufacturing, or in your case of, like, you know, as you described with your refrigerator and how people will be able to improve the experience of the quality of the refrigeration in your home, to medicine. I mean, imagine a, you know, 10 years ago, a scientist who maybe trying to help, you know, has a hypothesis on how to, you know, sort of solve a potential health-related problem. You know, you might have been doing a lot of things on a whiteboard and small experiments, but imagine a scientist today in school who has a hypothesis and wants to ask a question, you know, that might result in thousands of compute cores for just a matter of seconds, sort of reasoning over a genome library. I mean, and 10 years ago, that would be almost unheard of, or it would take many, many, many months. You might, a year and a half later, you might get answers back. Today, people can do that, like, now in the cloud. So it has tons of potential in every industry. But we really believe that, you know, at the end of the day, there, you know, if you're going to have a data-driven culture, which in simple terms means the more people that can ask questions of the data and get insights from it, you know, the more competitive and the more dividends you'll get from that data. And to be a data-driven culture, you really, truly need a consistent data life cycle. And, you know, I don't know that one goes without the other. And if you end up with a really consistent data life cycle in terms of how you collect and manage and how you transform and analyze and how you visualize and decide on it, you know, you can end up in an amazing place. And the cloud is such an enabler. In terms of, and I don't know that this ever, and I would assume for many, many, many years to come, you know, we could all see benefits in every single industry segment. But I think the real trick is going to be is having that consistent data life cycle, and then you create those data dividends and off you go.
And it's not only the data that we collect for ourselves, our own data, but this ability through the internet and through cloud and cloud services, being able to leverage other data, whether it be, you know, social data or data from any number of other databases. There seems to be thousands of them available. Being able to collect all that information, and then, so not only using your own data, but using somebody else's data too.
Yeah. You know, when you, I guess if, you know, if you think about this notion of collecting and managing data, you know, if we were doing this show 10 years ago, we would have largely been talking about relational data and almost to the point of it being the exclusive data model. But, you know, it's pretty exciting. In today's terms, you know, you're right. Not only is there data from outside sources that you can use, but, you know, if you think of the different types of data models and their purpose, I mean, and, you know, you have retailers today, for example, that, you know, they'll have their customer orders in a relational database because there's transactions that are related to it, and that's the type of thing that they need. But at the same time, they have, you know, these huge deployments where they're using something like HD Insight, which is our Hadoop-based managed service, and Azure, where, you know, for them, they really don't know the type of questions that they're going to ask yet, or the type of structure around the data, but they want to collect it all. And I think that's a familiar story we've all heard before. But the reality is it's all about capturing everything. And if that means you need to capture data in a semi-structured or unstructured state, you know, have at it. You have something like HD Insight. If you have data that you've transformed and you need to put it in a relational model, you have that in Azure SQL Database. You know, if you're building a mobile application, which, you know, we all have mobile phones and apps on them that need this, you know, you don't really need this rigid structure of a schema managed environment. It can be looser. Then you have something like DocDB, and, you know, the if you need the ability to search data, like all these different data models, we have such a thing with our new search service. So there, you know, and if you're a traditionalist and you grew up on a SQL virtual machine, and you're really looking to lift and shift that into Azure. You know, this whole aspect of collect and manage is not trying to force somebody into any one way of collecting and managing, but giving people the flexibility in the cloud to collect and manage data in whatever data model they need that's best fitting. And then it really, then the conversation turns into, you know, how do you connect these things in ways that people can sort of realize scenarios that they've never been able to do before.
Yeah, as we go deeper into this series over the course of the next 10 weeks or so, we're going to talk a lot about individual use cases and different aspects of cloud and cloud services to go a lot deeper. But for now, I'd kind of like to answer the question for people. So let's say that we buy this, you know, we need to collect this data. We need to be able to, you know, we totally agree with you that we want to be able to get useful information out of this data. Why cloud services? Why not, you know, go the old traditional way of, you know, buying a bunch of hard drives and dumping it in your server? What does cloud services give us that we don't have today?
Economic scale and flexibility. I mean, I actually think you're asking a wonderful question. I always like to sort of flash back a little bit in time, and you know, you look at the number of folks before that. Yeah, I meet enterprises almost every day that, in one way or another, they either have built their own data centers and. One thing consistent with them all is that in short order, they've realized the cost. I mean, we were just with an ISV last week, and this ISV, you know, they build a sort of medical type application and it's for patient management and prescription management and so on and so forth that, you know, doctors and nurses use in a hospital. And at one point, you know, from where they began to buying their own disks and cores and whatnot, you know, that 10 years ago, that was normal to them. But, you know, the reality is in today's terms, you know, they are a global business. So one of the things that they'll look at is, you know, the day of being an ISV was one thing where I built a packaged app and I would send it down to a customer and that customer would install and deploy it. But in the new world with the cloud, what they're able to do is become a SaaS provider where they, you know, for them, you know, in their old business model, they used to say things like, boy, oh boy, it was really hard for us and very expensive to try to purchase machines and assign two cores to every tenant application, and we don't know if it's going to be bursty or not, and they didn't really have a lot of elasticity. You know, they weren't really sure, and they would try to project just how much storage they would need. And at the end of the day, they were spending millions and millions of dollars, you know, trying to sort of guess usage patterns and whatnot. And then when they look at the cloud, it's exciting for them because, you know, they are now able to do things. And like hyperscale for them is we need to have our application literally in all regions of the world, and it needs to happen now. In the old day, not such a thing. You would be planning data centers and ordering gear, and you might wait months. In today's terms, they actually could go do that right now. That's big for them. And then from a cost perspective, I think one of the huge things that's happened with data is storage has really become a commodity. I guess storage and compute in some sense, mm-hmm. where you take the Googles and the Amazons and the Azures of the world, all driving storage costs to all-time lows. So from a customer's point of view, when you look at Azure, it's like a bottomless pit of storage. And the best part of that is it's geo-redundant. It works. And the price continues to go down and down and down. So there's huge benefit for a lot of customers in that regard. So when they used to have to forecast and think about supply chain, for them, it's just this bottomless. It's like a giant drive that just goes forever. Mm-hmm. And then from a compute perspective, you know, when you need to bring a ton of computing power, that's not a, you know, let's spend millions of dollars on ordering machines and provisioning them. It's something that you want to instantly do now. And I'd say the last thing from this is the flexibility in the cloud of being able to, I can't tell you how many meetings I've been in my career in the enterprise where we used to sit in these rooms with architects and they would spend tens of hours and days and weeks just trying to guess. Do you guys remember back in the late 90s when that the first birth of a baby, there's a gal who did a birth of a baby live on the internet. Do you guys remember that? I think it was like in the late 90s. And I remember the company that was actually hosting this, they had brought us in. They had spent months just trying to guess how many HTTP servers they need and how much storage and how much compute. And, you know, they're sitting there watching PerfMod like crazy. And today, I mean, that's just a thing in the past in some sense, where the cloud today, you need to scale, you can instantly scale. And it's very, very, the economics behind it are revolutionary.
You know, and the other thing that I'm seeing too, it's not just these, you know, big businesses that have, you know, monster data centers that they're saving millions, but right down to the small startup, or even a small startup that doesn't want to be a small startup, doesn't want to be small, and that is, you know, the lack of capital expenditures to get whatever that workload might be up and running very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And very privately, right? You don't have to, you don't have this evidence of, you know, servers showing up at your door and stuff. So there's just so many different advantages from other perspectives as well.
No, there is. I mean, you're right. I'll give you another really interesting story. So we have, you know, we meet developers. We meet more startups that are so excited about the possibility of what Azure can be for them. And, you know, like you're right, from a cost perspective. I'll give you another really good one. There are more dev teams that we meet today. These are real startup. The team is all devs. You know how many DBAs they actually have on their team?
One or none?
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Literally zero. And yeah, one or none. It's actually none is the answer I hear almost all the time. So think about it. If you're a small startup, or you're a departmental team, and you don't have a DBA. Now think about, here you are building an application, and you know, many people have said for years, like, gosh, you know, all the applications that my business depends on, I'd love for them to have the highest levels of availability and DR protection. But the reality is, a select few get that type of benefit and attention because, one, it's a very complicated thing to do. Two, it requires usually your most sophisticated administrators and DBAs to perform all these tasks to get it done. And then three is cost. Now, in Azure SQL Database today, like if you and I were a little startup and we were a dev team and neither one of us had DBA skills and, you know, hey, we wanted the benefit of DR and HA for our application, you know, what would we do? Would we try to go out and hire a DBA to help us with that? Or, you know, would you go into Azure SQL Database and configure such a thing basically through a UI? And, you know, a great example in Azure SQL Database of sort of changing the game, if you will, is all these startups and dev teams that have no DBAs and those apps need HADR. You can go into Azure SQL Database today. You can provision a premium database. There's a really nice visual experience where you can create secondaries in pretty much any region of the world. It's about 4 or 5 mouse clicks. You don't have to understand anything underneath it. And voila, what used to take months and months and months with the most sophisticated people can now be done in a matter of minutes by just about anybody at a fraction of a cost. So that's another great example of how the cloud is really changing the game and enabling a lot of people to do things they've never been able to do before.
I totally agree. And whenever you say sophisticated people, you know what that means to me is very, very, very high price consultants, right?
Yeah.
So those are not only hard people to find, hard people to get on the calendar if you can afford them in the first place. So it's more than just the cost. It's the availability of the technical resources and everything that goes into that whole process of getting that expertise. So it's all good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's drive a little bit deeper into hyperscale. From a hyperscale perspective, you know, I get the really big business that wants, you know, or even a startup business that you know wants to launch their product worldwide, or you know, they think it's going to be the next best thing to, you know, the next new Facebook, where you know whenever they flip the switch, they've got to be ready to take in, you know, 10 million people. Not only them, but those other smaller businesses. What does it mean? What does hyperscale mean to them? What value do they get out of it, and why do they care?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. Take the Super Bowl. Like, I think the Super Bowl last week, you know, an NBC running, you know, NBC is obviously not a small startup, but just look at what NBC pulled off on the Azure platform on the Super Bowl. It was the, you know, it was the most watched, if I understand my facts right here, I believe it was the most watched television show in the history of sports. And
in history, yeah, all television shows.
Yeah, of all, I think you're right, of all television shows. And just, you know, so what that means to you and I at home, if, you know, if you're not sitting in front of your TV and you're ready, you need to watch the game and you have a device, you know, who wants to watch a game that's buffered? You know, nobody. I'm right, you know, like, especially at the end of the game, the Seahawks had a little trouble. But, you know, you want to watch that stuff live. And, you know, NBC was able to come to Azure and sort of, you know, provision an environment, if you will, maybe anticipating high usage and adoption and viewership. And reality is it set a record in the history of television. And I never really heard like that type of scale in the very beginning. I think people are excited about it, but it's one way of thinking about reaching out to millions and millions and millions of people for 3 hours. And once you're done with that 3-hour game, then all of a sudden, those resources you don't need, and being able to sort of check them back into the pool, that's a big deal. Now take, you know, a smaller business who, you know, they might have a, you know, take somebody who's created a retail application and they're selling a good, or, you know, on the West Coast, and all of a sudden, you know, their business is taking off, and they need to now have a presence across the United States. And in cloud terms, that's 5 mouse clicks. And next thing you know, your OLTP application is running on the East Coast. And then as your business grows, if it turns out people in Europe are quite interested in what you're selling, boom, that's another 5 mouse clicks, and you just cross the Atlantic Ocean, and now you're in Europe. And, you know, that little startup idea that happened in California that stretched across the United States and ended up in Europe, as it goes more global and people in Asia are quite interested in that good and they need to buy it and you need to be there, you know, that's 5 more mouse clicks. And, you know, literally you've just spanned your business across the world. So, you know, 10 years ago, if we were a startup, boy, that would have been a great story, you know, to talk about, but maybe very few people actually realized it. In today's terms, anybody can do what I just said.
Yeah, you know what, whenever I hear that, what it says to me is that we have found a way through cloud services to really give ourselves more time, because we're able to do things in moments that used to take us years to do. So that's rolling a lot of time off the clock in terms of being able to, you know, make the money now, you know, get the money while it's there, right? Instead of having to wait for the infrastructure or wait for something else to catch up. I think it's all great.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, and just think of, like, you know, think of kids that are, you know, I remember growing, I grew up in Michigan, and I actually went to school to be a mechanical engineer. I thought I was going to be in the car industry building cars, and, you know, I've been doing software pretty much my whole life. But, you know, I remember one of the coolest things of when you'd go around the industry, the automotive industry, is this notion of clay models. And, you know, these guys would, like, carve out cars, and they'd get an idea for the car. And then, you know, if you changed your idea, no problem. You just change the shape of the clay, and you could sort of, just right in front of you, see this, you know, you could create an idea, you could visualize it, yeah, that one's not going to work out. And it was as simple as shaping clay. And then, you know, but in other industries where you're not shaping clay, but people are coming into work every day with ideas, doctors, nurses, athletes, you know, it could be, you know, lawyers, you students in school. I think one of the coolest things about what's happening in the industry right now is people in any industry, literally any segment, can come up with an idea, experiment with that idea. Hey, if that idea didn't pan out, no problem. You can move on to your next idea and your next idea. So you fail super fast. It's really affordable in that sense. And then people are finding these newer innovations faster. That's why I think we're going to see potentially breakthroughs in so many industries in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I think about other startup, I was just talking to my nephew on the phone. I think it was yesterday, the day before yesterday. He's 19 years old, and he's starting his own business. And the business that he's starting up is, you know, he's been a gamer since he was much younger. And even my 9-year-old son has a couple of servers that he's stood up. And, you know, because you have cloud resources like Azure. That's super simple to do. It, literally, my 9-year-old son did it. and Danny is actually running a business helping people stand up servers on Azure, in particular Minecraft servers. So he's out there as a consultant and as a coach and also as a hoster himself, leveraging the cloud platform. And this is just a small business that he started up with literally zero overhead. I mean, the cost of an Azure subscription to get started is, you know, start out with a free trial and then pay for what you use. So I definitely get how it totally changes everything.
Yeah. And, you know, here's an interesting thing about, you know, Danny, think about what your kid is doing here. And I actually think this is very canonical and it's driving a change in software. There are many of Danny's out there. And you know, 10, 15 years ago, especially in this enterprise space, it's a fun one to talk about. But, you know, take security, for example. You know, 10 years ago, if you really wanted to make sure your data was secure, you just think of the type of people that would have to come in and help you think through encryption and, you know, things like encryption at rest and in transit and so on and so forth and managing keys and, you know, but does Danny have time to sort of go learn about all that stuff? Is he's a 19-year-old trying to do good in Minecraft? You know, the answer is probably not right now. Yep. But what it's really driving is as you start to engineer, you know, in the old day, you would have engineered the most sophisticated technology and you would have relied on the most sophisticated skill set to configure and help people run it. But in today's era, those same incredibly smart engineers are building the most sophisticated technology. But the big difference and change is the simplicity and how you make that very usable and approachable for the Dannys of the world to the most, you know, to the largest enterprise. And you know, you take, for example, Azure Key Vault that we just announced a few weeks ago and the work we're doing with the database where, you know, a user can come into, Danny could come into the system and he can say, hey, look, you know what? I need all of the data to be secure in my environment and literally click a button. You know, whereas an enterprise might come in and say, you know, I want that same thing too, but I actually want role separation. I want my security officer managing keys and you can do such a thing. So I love the fact that you have the most complex technology, most complex problems being solved. But more importantly, it is the cloud and sort of the Danny scenario you just shared is driving a level of simplicity and approachability to technology that I've never seen before, which is, I think, pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. Let's go a little bit deeper on the whole security front. I understand you guys are making a pretty significant investment in security. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I guess a mantra that we have here is what the cloud has done for us from an engineering perspective is when we build things, it's cloud first. And what I mean by that is, you know, we have we have products and services in all form factors. So, you know, you have customers that are using SQL Server on-premise, and they could also be using the cloud. But the one really, really cool thing about the cloud is that as we build things, it's going to show up in the cloud first. You get to test it out, and then eventually that will make its way down to our on-premise server products. Now, security is an area that we've got some really, really good work that has happened and more to come. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you think about things like data at or encryption at rest with data, you know, the technology like TDE, at least for the relational database and others, pops up as first of mind. And that's something that we'll be supporting in our system, and you'll have the ability to, if you don't want to manage keys, no problem. The service will manage TDE for you. If you're in a scenario where you have a separation of duties, you know, you can actually set the environment up such that a security officer could come in and rotate keys for you. We've done a lot of work in auditing, you know, as we've talked about this explosion of devices and data. You know, auditing is maybe more important today than I've ever seen before. So, it, you know, it's not just the one database, but we have some customers that are putting close to 70,000 databases a week into our service. And, you know, they're not looking to have more and more administrators. They're actually trying to reduce the one to none because that's their profit margin. So, you know, auditing, a lot of the auditing capabilities that are in Azure SQL Database today are fantastic. It tracks all DDL, DML changes in the environment. And then, you know, another really cool thing that, you know, we've always sort of believed that the more data you bring to Azure, the more value we should be able to give you back. And, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, think of, you know, you take TDE, you take something like auditing, and then you start to talk about things like intrusion detection prevention. And imagine if you had hundreds of thousands of databases in the environment, you know, would you want a human being assessing all of those databases for vulnerabilities, or would you potentially have, you know, advanced analytics and actual real data models and computing systems actually looking at that and baselining your environment and helping you detect and in some cases predict vulnerabilities that you've never been able to do before. So I think, you know, I'm trying to give you the whole sort of spectrum, if you will, of possibility and what we're working on here that I think our customers will love.
Well, that's awesome. Can you, so let's look at kind of the hybrid solution. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the scenarios that you're able to deliver? I mean, obviously you've got the security worked out. You've got some really awesome technology. But marrying that with what businesses have today, I imagine it's a pretty important concept.
Yeah. I'll give you two examples on this one. I'll give you three. So probably one of the most canonical and fundamental hybrid scenarios. And when I say hybrid, in this case, I'm referring to a customer that has data on-premise and they are really wanting to connect, if you will, their on-premise to the cloud and get benefit out of that. So, you know, one of the most canonical and straightforward things is backup. And, you know, being able to, you know, if you walk into a big enterprise, you'll often hear something like this: hey, we have thousands and thousands of SQL servers all over the place, and boy, oh boy, I wish we could back these things up in a very consistent and economical way. And this kind of goes back to where we started this conversation. When you love to back all those databases up encrypted in a bottomless pit. And they love that. But there are much cooler scenarios than that. One of our favorites is in SQL Server 2012, we shipped this always-on technology. It's basically our HA solution. Mm-hmm. And it took off like wildfire. It's done really well in the enterprise. And then as Azure was maturing, one of the things we started talking to customers about is you'd have more discussions with customers that would say things like, you know, it is really, in fact, I'll give you a real one here. I was in Japan. And if you know, in Japan, it's a very, very disciplined, rigorous, and sometimes cautious, you know, engineering approach to technology. And these guys, you know, do some amazing work there. And I remember we were sitting down with one particular customer, and we were talking about disaster recovery, and it was sort of related to the Fukumishu, I think it was, with a nuclear problem that they had there a few years ago. But it really sort of brought the world back together on, hey, if something really unexpected happened, what are we going to do for DR? And in the old world, they would have basically sat site planners down and tried to talk about where might rebuild another data center. And in Japan, it can be, I guess, anywhere in the world, can be incredibly time-consuming and expense. And in this once conservative, very conservative culture, all of a sudden I found myself, we were really talking about, boy, hey, you know, what if you could actually enroll an Azure virtual machine as a cloud secondary with your on-premise environment? And I will tell you, we had some of the most fascinating conversations there that have actually resulted in those deployments. And that really led us into this killer scenario where any customer of ours that has SQL Server on-prem with always-on availability group can enroll an Azure SQL virtual machine you know, from the cloud to participate with their on-premise availability group. And it's phenomenal. I mean, it's kind of one of those no-brainer scenarios, but when you really look at the people that are doing this, it's remarkable for them from an agility standpoint, cost-saving standpoint, et cetera. Now, the third example I'll give you is a scenario that we've, the scenario is really, really exciting, and it's one that we've been, you know, working on in our research lab. But, you know, you end up in You know, think of a scenario where you have hot and cold data. So I could give you the example of, you know, I have orders, my orders table is hot, but my orders history table is cold. You know, imagine if you could, you know, you have all of that on premise, and imagine, you know, if you're really looking at the cloud going, gosh, I'd love to be able to stretch my database into Azure, where I could, maybe that cold data I could store and take advantage of the cost savings on Azure storage. And, you know, if I need to compute over that, I could quickly spin up compute. And boy, if I could sort of stretch a database into Azure in a way that was transparent to my applications, that would be incredible. And that's probably one of the most forward-looking, innovative scenarios, you know, that we're working on, that, you know, sort of from backup to enrolling a secondary to actually stretching a database into Azure, you know, it kind of gives you the full gamut of the possibility. I mean, it's pretty amazing of what you can do in this hybrid sense.
And all of those things are super easy to do, right? I mean, a few mouse clicks away.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. I mean, it has to be. And if it's not, you know, you're just limiting, you know, who can take advantage of what.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but I have a couple of more questions that I really feel like I have to get through. We talked a little bit about SQL DB earlier, but what I want to, I know there's going to, and we're going to go a lot deeper into SQL DB later on in the series, but from the standpoint of usability and getting people and actually customers being able to leverage that technology, there's this concept of the stateful workload. Can you, you know, kind of talk to us about building a globally distributed stateful workload in SQL Azure DB, what that means to the business, what that means to the developer, at a high level, you know, of course, not, you know, nuts and bolts, and how they're able to really leverage that to solve their, you know, future business problems?
Yeah, so, you know, when you think of the relational database being, you know, this is one of the, you know, I would argue in computer science, this is a really, really, really hard domain. I mean, you can never lose a customer's data. You can never, you know, give back a wrong answer. You know, imagine if your bank statement all of a sudden was just gone, or, mm-hmm. you know, you deposited something one day and the next it was just, you know, what you thought you deposited, what came back was a smaller number. I mean, it's just sort of unacceptable. When you think of things in those terms, you know, when you start to, you know, I know we've talked about a lot of cool things today, but when you really think about, boy, oh boy, how do you build this globally distributed, stateful application that can never lose data, can never give back a wrong answer? I mean, that's a pretty big task, and it's one that we've been working on for the past, you know, almost 5 years. And, you know, it's hard. It's really, really hard. But the net benefit for a lot of businesses, I think I can best describe it like this, is that, you know, you look at the innovations that are in Azure today around GODR. GODR has actually been around for a long time. It's just like I said earlier, not everybody's been able to use it because it's complicated and it's difficult. But in Azure, it's a piece of cake. Danny could go provision an active GODR environment today, and he may never even take a course or a class on it and be in great shape. You know, that's real material benefit to everybody. You know, another one that's sort of behind the scenes is, you know, this notion of, you know, in the old day when we'd build software and somebody would take it and deploy it, you know, our engineers weren't managing that software, and there's only so much you could do. But in this new era of the cloud, boy, we have millions and millions of applications on infrastructure that our engineers are running. And, you know, the type of telemetry, and, you know, just think of, like, applying machine learning to an environment. You know, there's another really, really cool, like, think of all the databases or, you know, data-centric applications you could have running in Azure and just running ML against that. And, you know, you fine-tune the right models, and next thing you know, this system is how the system could go back to every app owner and say, hey, I'm recommending an index here, or I'm recommending an improvement to your query there based on just this massive amount of analysis you can do in an environment. So, you know, what would have been maybe a human being years ago, that super sophisticated consultant you talked about that you could barely schedule or find, I think is going to be very ubiquitous and prevalent in these cloud environments. So, you know, being global, being stateful, being distributed, running that infrastructure sort of sets us up and our system up to do those types of things.
In this first series, the last thing that I want to make sure that we at least have a basic understanding of is Azure's not the only cloud platform out there. As a whole, how does Azure differentiate from the competition?
Yeah, you know, I think it kind of goes back to, and this is a good way, I think, to sum up our chat here, is, you know, Azure really truly differentiates in three dimensions. It's hyperscale, enterprise grade, and hybrid. And, you know, the usual names that pop up in that type of discussion is Google and Amazon. And, you know, I personally have a lot of respect for both of those companies and what they do. And I think, you know, all three of us can talk about hyperscale. And you look at what's happening in Azure today, the number of regions that we have in the world exceeds pretty much everyone, and we are not stopping here. So the, you know, the one nice thing about, you know, what our leadership is driving for here is to make sure that we have the largest global presence, you know, for the world ahead, and I think our actions speak to that wholeheartedly. You know, the other thing about hyperscale that I would sort of bring up is, and this is one that you may not read about it, you may not think about it, but for years we've been running these giant applications. Bing has the largest corpus of data in the world, Hotmail, you know, Office 365. When, you know, it's, you know, building out facilities is one thing, but when you're running global applications that are of the largest scale in the world, wow, can do your engineers really truly learn a lot. So from a hyperscale perspective, you know, I think there's a lot of good things for us there. From an enterprise grade perspective, I think, you know, you look at Active Directory in Azure and identity management, it, in my opinion, I think that's a league of its own. I mean, we really, you know, many, many years ago when we really got serious about the enterprise, we have full respect for it. We don't take any of it for granted. And our actions, I think, clearly show that. You look at, I think we have one of the most sophisticated identity management systems that exists in the world. We have millions of users coming into it and using it. You know, we have, you know, on into how we're approaching security, to the different workloads that we provide. It's very familiar language to many enterprises out there, which leads to the third thing, which I think we're the only one that can really speak to hybrid. I don't know that Amazon and Google, you know, could really speak to it in the way we can, but those scenarios I gave you is, you know, we build products in a way that they show up, you know, that code is going to show up in Azure first. It's going to make its way to the on-premise environment. But the reality is because we are investing in building software the way we are, our customers are able to take their on-premise assets and connect them into Azure, like that stretch table I was telling you about, and rolling secondaries, creating virtual private networks. And, you know, the amount of flexibility and choice they have is sort of unmatched anywhere in the industry. So, you know, hyperscale, enterprise grade, and hybrid, we really have a lot of belief are key differentiators for us on the platform as a whole.
Awesome. So the last thing that I want to cover, and I'll just kind of throw some things out there, but I wanted to find out if you had any extras. I want to kind of leave our audience with a few tips on where to get additional information. Do you have any places that you like to share?
Yeah, you know, the best thing that I would invite people to is go straight to azure.com, and you'll see all the data services we have. We have some really good case studies up there and videos demonstrating canonical scenarios and how-tos, and, you know, the next Danny out there, it's like, hey, that sounds kind of cool. I want to learn about this new service, or what is this DocDB thing? I am building a mobile app. You know, you'll find just about everything that you need there. The other thing I'd point people to is YouTube. So the team has done a lot of work to create a lot of these little 2 and 3 minute vignette videos, if you will. And you can get into YouTube and search up Azure, and you know, if it's Azure SQL Database or DocDB or HD Insight, you'll find some really good short vignette videos that will sort of help introduce certain concepts and get you on your way so you're successful.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sean. I just want to, a couple other things that I'll mention on that, you know, kind of keeping getting up to speed is Microsoft Virtual Academy. And I've got a shortcut URL, aka.ms/clouddatamva. I guess next is, you know, I really want to applaud everybody that's, you know, that's watching this video, and I hope they'll continue to watch the rest of the series for doing, you know, getting started in, you know, in understanding cloud and cloud service, in particular the data side of cloud services. But we put together a program to give startup business access to tens of thousands of dollars worth of free software and Azure services. I set aside 1,000 codes for this. For those that qualify to leverage the program. So if the audience, if they qualify or if they know anyone who has a startup business or want to start their own business programming or otherwise developing in the cloud or, you know, Internet of Things devices or whatever, they can go sign up at aka.ms/clouddatafree. They do need to have a business name and a valid URL for their business already, but that link will have embedded into it a security code to get them to the application form, and then they can start. You know, once they sign up, they go through the step-by-step instructions for how to deploy each of these workloads from buildyourbiz.org, which is a community site that was built just to show step-by-step instructions on how to get some of the basic components set up. And, you know, finally, you know, the cloud technologies are growing at such a staggering pace. So please keep learning, keep growing. You know, do it for your employer, but most importantly, do it for yourself, for your career. Your employer will benefit too, but for the most part, you'll get the most benefit out of it. Keep learning and stay tuned for the next episode of Data in the Cloud coming real soon. You can access the landing page for all Data in the Cloud sessions from itproguru.com/clouddata. I'll put live links for all of these resources as well as the resources that we mentioned throughout the presentation, including, you know, the Azure and some case studies and stuff like that as well. So thanks, Sean, for joining us. I really appreciate it. And we'll be back again next week with our next episode.
All right. Have a great day.